My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. I want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. If you're enjoying this program, please show your support by making a contribution today, or better yet, become a monthly sustaining member. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text the letters KBOO to the number 44321. Thanks very much. It's our fall pledge drive time. KBOO is 55 years old, so we're trying to raise $55,000. The theme is plants. I was asked, if this show is a plant, what would it be? I could only really think of English ivy, which is what Americans call ivy. One of those tenacious plants you can hack off at the base, but it'll keep coming back. That's how I think of KBOO Art Focus, which I've been doing for 11 years. Please give some money if you're enjoying hearing about art in Portland. Thanks. I'm Joseph Gallivan. I'm here at Artist Alley at Rose City Comic Con, and I'm talking with Jack Kent. He's the creator of Sketchy People, a series of single panel cartoons of people mostly spotted around Portland in the streets, and he also publishes them in book form. Thanks for talking to KBOO, Jack.
Thank you, Joseph. Glad to be here.
Sketchy People, these are very simple ink on paper drawings. It's a kind of a naive style, not really much background, but you're really looking at kind of weird people in the street in Portland. I say weird, but people who look a bit different. Here's one, you know, a guy with a big vest that says, "I like big butts and taco trucks." That's it. He's walking along having a ciggy. Another guy's doing acrobatics on two bike racks on Fremont. There's someone with a backpack drumming on a steel light pole in the street. There's a fender bender, people arguing in the street. Cover of your third book is No Drama Llama. What's the guy?
That's Cesar the No Drama Llama and Larry.
Right. So what's the big idea? Like, you're drawing people in the street.
Yeah, it just is a project that found me. I had no inclination of starting another comic or doing anything of a people-watching comic. I saw somebody on the Max one day, had to draw them, and then I saw somebody else at a Starbucks with a ventriloquist doll, and I was like, that's unusual, I better draw that. Mm-hmm. And then after I got about five sketches, I realized this is much more than just a collection of sketches. This is a new project that became Sketchy People.
Mm-hmm. And you're drawing the kind of people that you would glimpse, but they kind of get away. Like, when you're in the street, it's really easy to lose people. How do you manage to kind of nail down the image?
It's definitely a muscle memory. People watching is definitely an art of its own. But you nailed it. It's the minutia of life is so easy to lose day to day. But I've always got a sketchbook with me. I'm always ready to talk to people. And when somebody strikes my fancy, I'll reach out and I'll introduce myself, and hopefully I can draw them.
There's one I saw. It's like some old guy, you know, long hair. And he's in a coffee shop, and he says, "I'll tell you about my life after I've had my coffee."
Yeah, that was the Fresh Pot on Mississippi Avenue. And that's the beauty thing about this comic, is that it's a visual journey and a journal of my life for you to follow along with.
It's mostly Portland-based, but I've seen New York and Oakland, I think, in there, or San Francisco. Yep. Well, where's the richest hunting ground?
It's, Portland is my hometown, and I've been to all over the country, and I always come home. Definitely Portland takes the cake, and around Portland, I love where I am now in St. John's. But, you know, if you got to you know, an eye for people watching. They are everywhere. And we just went to England over the summer and saw a lot of great people in Scotland and London. So if you watch for people, they are out there.
Well, what's your approach to them? What do you say when you just walk up to them in the street?
Usually I'll introduce myself, tell them I love their look, because that's what attracts me to them is, you know, maybe it's their an instrument they're playing or an outfit that they've carefully curtailed. I'll introduce myself, ask for a photo, tell them I do this project, and the reception's been really well.
Do you have a kind of red line that you won't cross type of person?
That's an excellent question. As I've done this more and more, I've learned a lot more about people. I've learned a lot more of the human condition. And there's my kind of red line that I do is if somebody doesn't want to be doing something, that's where I won't draw that. You know, if it's somebody that is clearly, you know, not having a good day, not in control of their faculties, I'm gonna put down my camera, put down my sketchbook, and maybe I'll go ask if they need a hand before I even draw them. So it's not always easy to discern, you know, who's in their capacities or not, but this project's helped me, and I hope it's helping other people to really open their eyes more to everybody out there. And everybody's got a story to tell, and some people don't need to be drawn, some people need to be helped. But some people love to be drawn, and that's what I hope to do. So that's why I got to introduce myself and ask about them and learn about them. And that's what Sketchy People's about.
You have a kind of tagline, you could be next. It's like the reader could end up in the sketchbook.
Absolutely. Even my grandma is in one of these books, and my uncle's in one of these books. So.
Hang on, what was your grandma up to?
She demanded to be drawn. So when grandma demands to be drawn, you know, she wants to be a sketchy person. You better well draw grandma.
Is there a kind of time limit you give yourself to talk to them before you just give up and like, this isn't going to work as a sketch?
No, I think since all I really need is a image or a quick thumbnail sketch, that interaction goes really, really quick. So usually if somebody's looking really great and got a great wardrobe on, I can just say, hey, my name's Jack, I do Sketchy People, love your look, photo, and we're on our way. Mm-hmm. It takes 20 seconds to stop and chat real quick.
So these are like the old straight-ups, they used to call them in London. People would go out looking at fashion, take a picture, get the name, a little quote. You know, Willamette Week does them with a camera. So you're not just looking at cool outfits. You're also looking at eccentric behavior.
Correct. Yeah, anything that gives me a double take, or maybe if I hear a quote that's really interesting. The quotes are some of my favorite Sketchy People entries, is because if you take something out of context, you realize people are hilarious without even trying to be. And sometimes a quote can just really make a drawing.
So yeah, you do the kind of like overheard on the subway kind of stuff. These are people walking around Lloyd Center.
Yep, correct.
Is this project just you, or do you share it with somebody else?
This project's just me. I've been doing it for over 7 years, and it's just been a really nice cathartic way to get back to pen and ink and being able to carry art supplies around with me, carry a sketchbook, and just kind of take it wherever I go, because no matter where I am, you know, if there's people there, I gotta be ready to draw, ready to talk. So having my materials with me is the only way to go.
What kind of ink do you use, and what kind of paper?
I use Micron pens, just black ink, and I use a B paper sketchbook, and that's it. It's like, it's the most stripped down version of this, of a comic I've ever done.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. I've been talking to Jack Kent, the creator of Sketchy People. You can see his work on Instagram at SketchyPeoplePDX, all one word. Thanks for talking to KBU, Jack.
Thank you very much. And if you want to learn more about all of my cartooning works, visit kentcomics.com.
I'm here in Artist Alley at Rose City Comic Con. I'm talking to comic book artist Nicola Scott. Nicola lives in Sydney, Australia, and she has brought some originals. Tell us, what have you brought, Nicola?
Hi there. I've brought a couple of pages from a book called Wonder Woman Historia, which is essentially a long form telling of the DC Comics Amazon characters. So essentially the race of women that their Wonder Woman character comes from.
Right. Would people who've seen the movies be familiar with these characters?
Yeah, pretty much. Not all of the characters specifically, but certainly the Amazon race.
Mm-hmm. So you have this page. I'd say it's like 2 feet by 1.5 feet.
It's pretty large.
It's an original. So you have this Hippolyta standing with her legs apart. She's in kind of, you know, medieval type or Greek gear. She's got like a Greek haircut, holding a little two-headed axe, fists clenched.
This is part of the storytelling. So in comics, as an artist, I feel like a big part of my job, the primary part of my job, is to best facilitate the intention of the writer. It's kind of my job to pace out the story, to deliver the information in a way that is interesting to the eye, but also gives the reader information at the right time, telling the tone of the story, the pace of the story, the intention of the story, and trying to sort of highlight who the characters are and what their intentions are in any given moment. And in the moment of this page, this is there's been a build-up to what is about to become a big action moment. This is a moment where Heracles has been sent down by the gods to punish and destroy the Amazons, for Hippolyta being one of the few human Amazons, not goddess created and not superpowered, is stepping out with just a tiny axe and no armor, ready to face him because she's ready to go.
So you have this panel across the top, and it's a man fighting a woman, but you see Hippolyta's axe in the foreground, just her hand and an axe, shaded. So it's like she's watching, and she's probably going to intervene.
Yeah, she's stepping in from the side, which is why I've given sort of just below that, taking up a significant part of the page, this sort of hero shot of her sort of in a strong stance, ready to fight, ready to confront. Because this is the first action moment of the issue. This is the build-up too, as she sort of accepts the challenge of this giant, you know, 12-foot-tall man, demigod that's come to punish them.
Along the top, we have a strip that seems very Dali-esque. A bunch of, looks like ants walking left to right.
So part of this sort of storytelling sequence, we're sort of playing right next to it, is this analogy of strength in numbers. What's been playing out on other pages and in other panels is ants against a giant bug thing that can kill ants pretty easily, and how when grouped together they can take down a praying mantis pretty easily. Here is Hippolyta just sort of being in the sort of reality of that metaphor, being one of the many ants that is about to take down this giant praying mantis of a man.
So this is from your book Historia. Then you have another book called Black Magic.
Yeah, so Historia is owned by DC Comics. That's where all the characters come from. My book Black Magic is a creator-owned book that I collaborated on with a writer friend of mine. It's about a homicide detective whose real heritage is that of a witch.
All the art and all the furniture and the house in the story is all based on like where you grew up.
Yeah. My mother taught me how to draw and how to paint as I was growing up. She passed away, you know, nearly 15 years ago. Her being such a big influence on my life, and her energy kind of feeling very appropriate for the tone of this book, I decided that I wanted to sort of pull from my real life experience and real life objects and art on the walls for the art on the walls of this character's home. I made the character look a little like my mother. We had a really sort of beautiful old Victorian house full of a whole lot of shit, really. But it was beautiful because it was sort of homely and elegant without being pretentious. And a lot of art on the walls because my mother was an artist and my grandmother was an artist, and there was a lot of art culture. They knew a lot of artists. So there was art everywhere. I wanted the character from this book about magic to sort of feel like she's got this family history that's gone on for generations and generations, and that this house is just full of generational acquired bits and pieces, nothing of which is of particular value, but all of which is kind of beautiful. Mm-hmm. So by populating it with stuff that I'm actually familiar with, I felt like I was in communion with my mum as I sort of applied the skills that she taught me when I was little.
Was your mother a professional artist?
She had been a professional artist when she was a teenager. You know, she left high school when she was 16 to be a commercial artist and then got married very young and had children very young. And then she just sort of studied art and taught herself art and then continued to teach me art and ended up teaching art. And, you know, art was her life. And she had moments of being professional in different ways and sort of finding new challenges with art. You know, she never sat still for very long. You know, I used to go to life drawing classes when I was 4 because she was going to life drawing classes and would just take me along instead of getting a babysitter or leaving me with my big sisters. Danger. She'd just take me along and gave me pads and charcoals and told me to draw the model. So I sort of became... It's a lot of instinctive training and a lot of training me to see properly and to draw what I see.
You have another piece here. This is more Hippolyta, right?
Yes.
Another original. You can do like a big vista with incredibly detailed trees, shading. You know, you're looking across this sort of a Greek temple, ruined temple, and the sun is on the horizon in the distance.
Well, the story is set in ancient Greece, hence the sort of the setting, the sort of ancient Grecian setting. But the nature of comic books, and one of the things that I find the sort of satisfying challenge of them, is that even though you're often sort of centering around a certain group of characters, the job of telling a comic book story is that you kind of have to be able to draw everything. You have to be able to draw cityscapes. You have to be able to draw forests. You have to be able to draw ruins. You have to be able to draw space stations. Whatever the story calls for, you have to find your way into drawing everything. And you've got to keep it visually interesting. You've got to sort of know how to zoom in and zoom out and find subtlety of emotion, but also give emotional information to the reader with a wide vista.
But also beautiful portraits, you know, close-ups of faces that are so well rendered that you can learn just by, without the words, you know, you can tell what's going on.
Thank you. Well, a lot of it came from, you know, even though I was being taught art from my mother, I had acting training. That was kind of my original career pursuit. And so I did a lot of stage work. I ended up doing a lot of production design and costume design to sort of support this acting life. And when I ended up putting that career aside and focusing on comic books, the real benefit of this work for me is that I get to still create costumes, create sets, and act out all of these characters. So I get to essentially cast them because I decide what they look like. And then as I read through the script, which is very much like a play or a screenplay, it's just dialogue and stage directions, I get to sort of work out how to tell that story, how these characters will act in these moments, and I get to play all the parts. You know, essentially, it's a job that sort of encompasses all the things that I love to do, but all in one space.
I mean, it looks like fun to do. What's your favorite thing about this part of the process, and what's your least favorite thing?
My favorite part is the storytelling. You know, there's people who can draw really beautifully, but they don't quite know how to tell a story. And for me, it's sort of the real understanding of the control that we as the artist have over how the story is received by the reader. Because the writer will have an intention, but it can all just fall aside if the artist doesn't sort of fully understand it. And for me, I love to understand it. I love to sort of dig for subtext. I love to sort of find interesting ways to sort of play an emotional dynamic. There's a scene that I drew, you know, it was about a decade ago now, about two teenagers breaking up. They were superhero teenagers and they were breaking up standing in a space station kind of thing. But it's essentially the emotional truth is there. And the way it was written and the way I think it would have been interpreted by a lot of artists was that they were yelling at each other. Lots of screamy faces. And I didn't want that for these characters because I felt really emotionally connected to them. And I wanted the character that would have come off poorly had it been an argument I didn't want her to come off poorly. I wanted sympathy for both characters. I thought the best way to tell it would be to make it a quiet discussion with them holding hands sitting on the corner of a bed. And I said to the writer, how do you feel about that interpretation? And he said, I love it. That's where I'm getting to have my control mm-hmm. over a moment. It's like, you know, a director deciding, you know, here's the script, here's how I would like to interpret it. And I then get to sort of direct it, act it, production design it, you know, all of the things. It's a great
job.
What
about your least favorite part?
Drawing repetitive anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not a machine, you know. I don't mind drawing characters over and over again mm-hmm. because from panel to panel, we're zooming in, we're zooming out, their facial expressions
are changing.
So you've
got this beautiful olive tree.
Is changing.
It's all finely wrought, it's twisted, it's every leaf is on there.
Well, the tree in the foreground, that was really fun to draw because it's something that I can sort of focus in on. But then the further into the background we get mm-hmm. of this vista, the more generic the trees become because it's just about populating the space with texture, really. And sometimes you find yourself doing that for quite a while, filling the space with texture. And while it's easy, it's boring, I can fall asleep doing it.
Where would people find your work?
At any local comic book shop. Anywhere around the world.
And what's your Instagram?
Nicola Scott Art on all the social media.
Okay. Two T's?
Two T's.
This is Joseph Gallivan. I've just been talking to comic book artist Nicola Scott. Thank you very much, Nicola.
Thank you.
This is Joseph Gallivan. I'm here at Artist Alley at Rose City Comic Con. I'm talking to Steve Lieber. He's been a face in Portland comics for a long time. He works out of Helioscope, a co-working space, and he's written dozens of books, but probably the one you've heard most lately is Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen. Who killed Jimmy Olsen? Thanks for talking to K-Boo, Steve.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We were talking about your style, and you were saying now that you do a lot of comedy, your style has changed a little.
I used to try to be an impressive illustrator and make really striking pictures. Now my drawing is much more utilitarian. I just try to stay out of the story's way and not distract people with impressive picture making because I want them to be surprised by the punchlines.
This book, Superman's Pal, Jimmy Olsen, it's based on a character who's been in Superman for a long time. Yep. Who is Jimmy Olsen?
Jimmy Olsen is a cub reporter and photographer at the Daily Planet. He's been part of Superman stories since the Superman radio serial in the 1940s. He's always been a comedic character. DC Comics invited a writer, Matt Fraction, who's a brilliant writer who lives here in Portland, to revive him for this series, and I was thrilled to get to work with Matt on the project.
Oh, what's Jimmy's skill these days?
Jimmy's videos that he does for the Daily Planet are the only part of the Daily Planet that are earning a profit currently. It's the only example of a pivot to video that actually worked. I've had a lot of journalists nod sadly at that fact right there. It's a story about someone attempting to kill Jimmy Olsen and Jimmy faking his own death and then trying to solve his own murder.
What kind of drew you to comedy over the years?
I love comedy as a consumer, and for the first 20 years of my life, no one ever asked me to be funny, but I happened to find myself on one project where I got to be funny and I was good at it, and we got some awards and a lot of acclaim, and it changed my career. Kind of the same thing that happened to the actor Leslie Nielsen. After 20 years of being a very straight-laced, serious actor, all of a sudden he became the comedy guy.
What is it though for an artist? Because you're not writing the words. What is it, just slapstick? What do you do with the bodies and the props that makes them funny?
Timing. Definitely timing. Knowing when to underplay a moment, when to go silly, when to go deadpan, when a funny detail in the background is going to make the joke work. There's a lot of different types of comedy in there. I've been doing comedy now for about 10 years in comics. This is the first one where the characters are actually likable. Usually a lot of the characters I was working with were sort of these affable sociopaths. Jimmy is a genuinely likable person. I got to do a different sort of thing.
And just to go back to the style, you know, it does seem like this could have been drawn 50 years ago. What kind of details do you incorporate that you know will give it that kind of original Superman look?
Well, I try to make every single character have gestures that can only be them. Yeah, I think very, very hard about the physical acting for each character, but I also try to draw very, very cleanly. When I was doing crime comics, I would draw with lots and lots of heavy shadows and a delicate rendering showing the light moving across a form. And here, the comic is lit like a Technicolor film from 1950. When you're shooting comedy, you tend not to move the camera around needlessly. You put the camera in one place and let funny things happen in front of it, rather than doing a lot of zooming in or anything like that, or certainly not dramatic angles or expressionism or anything like that. Comedy tends to work a whole lot better with the camera at some distance from people. It's great if you can see full figures. There's a lot of stuff that close-up would play as melodrama or tragedy, but if you pull the camera across the street, it's comedy.
That's brilliant. And have you got any tips for Portlanders who are breaking into the comic book world or maybe about to give up, but know they have talent?
Most important thing is to, one, do good work, two, do a lot of it, and three, put it in front of as many eyeballs as possible. The ways to do that are constantly changing. 20 years ago, it was having a website, then it was being on this social media versus that social media. The specifics will always change, but the most important thing is find as many people to see your work as possible.
This is Joseph Gallivan. I've been talking to Steve Lieber, comic book artist. You can find his work everywhere on social, but try Instagram, Steve Lieber Art. That's LIEBER, Steve Lieber Art. Thanks very much for talking to KBOO, Steve.
Joseph, thank you. It was a bit of pleasure.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. I want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. If you're enjoying this program, please show your support by making a contribution today, or better yet, become a monthly sustaining member. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text the letters KBOO to the number 44321. Thanks very much. It's our fall pledge drive time. KBOO is 55 years old, so we're trying to raise $55,000. The theme is plants. I was asked, if this show is a plant, what would it be? I could only really think of English ivy, which is what Americans call ivy. One of those tenacious plants you can hack off at the base, but it'll keep coming back. That's how I think of KBOO Art Focus, which I've been doing for 11 years. Please give some money if you're enjoying hearing about art in Portland. Thanks.